Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective Podcast. I'm Ted Berg, joined on the line, as always, by the Athletics Mets beat writer, Tim Britton. And Tim, you called it.
I nailed it. I predicted exactly how this was going to play out earlier this week. If you listened to our last podcast, you know that I was the one who plotted it out and said...
There's no way we'll do a podcast if they don't play a game.
I'm the one who predicted that we would be doing a podcast without them playing a game, thinking maybe it would rain. I was trying to set it up as if I had predicted the drama of Francisco Lindor signing a very long contract extension. The thing I got right was not that. The thing I got right was that there would be no opening day baseball for the Mets, unfortunately.
And I got to say, like, there's, you know, of all of the many stupid byproducts of this horrible pandemic, I think one of the dumbest is this notion that there's, like, a stigma to getting it. Like, it's literally a global pandemic, and, like, 10% of people in the world have had COVID-19 at this point. But at the same time, like, I want to know the Nationals player who—and I want to know what he did to rob me of my opportunity to watch meaningful baseball tonight, because we were recording this on Thursday night. At the time, it would be like the third inning, probably. And instead, there's no baseball for the Mets tonight. There's everybody else playing baseball, but not the Mets and the Nationals.
Yeah, I think that is the interesting fan reaction. And this dates back to, like, I remember in the football season, I think the Steelers fans in particular were upset because of the way their schedule got mangled by opponents having COVID pauses and different things. But that, you know, you want the Nationals to be punished in some way for this, which is not rational and not fair. The Mets, as Mets fans may remember, had their own issues with COVID last August, and they got to make those games up. They got to very famously win a game on a walk-off home run at Yankee Stadium. So especially at this point in the season, there is no need to force the Nationals to play with, like, double-A players. People say, what's the alternate site for, and you know, why don't they have call-ups for these guys? The problem is they were all together in spring training like 3 days ago.
If you call up like 10 guys from the alternate site, and then you put them in contact with the remaining 15 guys on the Philly on the Nationals, some of whom have been in contact with the guy who, you know, and then it's like you're just spreading it more. I understand why they're not playing. I just wish there were baseball. When are they going to play? When will the Mets play a game?
Yeah, so in our conversation with Luis Rojas this afternoon, that's Thursday afternoon, we talked to him about 3:45-ish. He was confident that they'd be playing on Saturday. Later in the day, Mike Rizzo, the Nationals general manager, laid out the details of the spread for the Nationals, that they had multiple other players test positive this morning or Thursday morning. And so that has led some in the Mets organization to be a bit more skeptical, I should say, about the possibility of playing Saturday Were I a betting man, I would probably venture that the Mets opening day would be Monday in Philadelphia, and that they would make up these games against the Nationals down the road. They do have 16 more matchups with them over the course of the season. But Saturday and Sunday have not been ruled out entirely as of the time we're recording this. Things could change on Friday morning when the Nationals get some more tests back, do some more contact tracing and all that. It could turn out, you know, the Red Sox had an issue last week or earlier this week when it seemed like they were going to lose a couple different players and then they were all fine. So there's still, I suppose, that chance, but it's probably looking more and more like a Monday opening day for the Mets against the Phillies.
And again, rationally, I don't blame anyone for getting COVID-19. I understand it's in many cases very, very difficult to avoid. It's incredibly contagious. But again, at the same time, I want security footage from every restaurant and bar on the one street in West Palm Beach that has restaurants and bars. And I want to know which Nationals were going out, because I really wish there was baseball. Let's talk about Lindor. This happened. It happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's like it looked like it was going to happen, and then it didn't look like it was going to happen. Like, it really didn't look like it was going to happen.
For like 3 hours, it looked like it wasn't going to happen, right? Like, it was a very brief time.
I would say it was probably like a solid 24 to 36 hours.
I don't know. I don't know. I believe. You got to believe. I was like, really? He wants 380? Like, that seems extreme. I mean, does he really think? I don't know. It seemed like he wasn't going to get that. And I don't know. It felt like a lot of like, oh, okay, we're going to do this publicly. All right, fine. We want 12 years, 385. I felt confident it was still, I believed. That's all.
I think if I were diving into this like 13 months ago, I would have been in the same spot as you, where I would have remained optimistic the entire time that a deal would have gotten done. But there have been so many instances in this sport in the last 13 months where it made, you know, the whole reason this deal got done in my mind, like, it just made too much sense for both sides. There was too much, importance for both sides to get it done. But I have said that about so many things in baseball in the last 13 months that have not come to pass.
Like, the universal DH. Pitchers exactly. Are hitting this year. Still, no one wants this. Like, no one wants this anymore. Other than, like, and I was a pretty staunch, I was in the rare camp of saying, like, I think I like the difference between the two leagues, and I'm happy with the National League not having the DH and the American League having the DH. And it lasted until they introduced the lineup at opening day last year. And I was like, oh, wait, the Mets get to have a DH now? Like, that's actually way better. And it totally sold me. It feels like everyone wants the DH. It's crazy that they don't have it. That's aside from the point. Yes, you make a good point. Things, a lot of times baseball and baseball teams seem to shoot themselves in the foot on things that should get done and everyone wants to get done. But in this particular case, it would have been a really, really bad look. And you wrote a great column about this. It would have been a horrible look for Steve Cohen to come in, a guy we know has $10 billion, to come in like talking big, goes out and gets the big acquisition, and then to turn around and boast about the ravioli being bad and then not get that done. Like, that makes that guy a villain forever and immediately.
Yeah, it was an interesting dynamic how it seemed like Mets fans had set themselves off in opposing camps on Twitter over those 24 to 36 hours where it looked like it wasn't going to happen. You had like the Cohen camp, which was like, he's done everything he can do. He's made a fair offer. It would be ridiculous if Lindor doesn't accept this. And then you had the Lindor camp, which is, how can you not sign Francisco Lindor? How can you make this trade and not sign him? And I spent a lot of that time trying to decipher how I felt about it, because I think 10 years and $325 million was a fair offer. I think 12 years and $385 million was a fair counteroffer. I think you could have written at the time, if it didn't get done, that both sides kind of blew this, but both sides were still kind of reasonable about it. It wasn't like there were, you know, the Mets were offering $200 million and Lindor wanted $500.
Right.
They were both in like the same stratosphere, which in retrospect suggests that it was going to get done all the whole time. But it just, you know, from the reporting that I and some others had done, it just, it seemed like they were kind of entrenched at where they were and didn't want to budge until, you know, the very last minute there where, you know, the game of chicken breaks up a little bit when you get close to actually colliding.
And the final terms, I believe 10 years, 341, right? And it was 1 million more than, was that intentional? 1 million more than Fernando Tatis Jr. got? Like, was that like a, could, because I think Ricky Henderson did that at some point, right?
I mean, it has to be intentional. From what I've heard, it's the Mets who bumped it up to that point. And you know, that was a way.
That's
of,
nice, like a nice little like. Well, we'll make you the highest paid shortstop.
Right, and you know, I think Lindor has said nice things about Tatis, great player. You know, great deal for him. Really happy for him, and kind of shrugged off the notion that it was important for him to be the highest paid shortstop. But you know, you don't price is right someone by going like a dollar more than them without that being a meaningful gesture. And so it does seem like for Lindor, who is, you know, he's a member of the executive subcommittee for the Players Association, which, so he knows that his deal is important for others the same way that, you know, Tatis's deal was important for him, that all of these things are built off of comparisons and juxtapositions. And I thought it was interesting on Thursday, he pointed, you know, a lot of people set the path for me to make this kind of money. So I felt the responsibility to do that for others moving forward for a big shortstop class in this upcoming free agency, which will be interesting to see if anyone gets more than the 341, if someone gets 342 or 341 and a half or something like that. That he was thinking about that. So that suggests that, yeah, it was important that he got more than Tatis, even though it's really not a one-to-one correspondence between them.
Well, you mentioned the way this contract will affect others, and you mentioned the shortstops, which is a good point. It's a very good class of free agent shortstops about to hit the market, but what about the others on the Mets, in the Mets clubhouse? Because I think as pretty much every Mets fan, as soon as like the smile wore off your face from knowing that this was got done, you moved on to thinking, okay, well now do Conforto, right? And so when will they do Conforto?
Yeah, that one will be a little bit tougher. It's easier now that you have Lindor done to do Conforto.
Because you know what your budget looks like and such.
Exactly.
I just want to note also, and I wonder if you think this is intentional, just like so people can stop saying it. There is like the $5 million deferred that will pay out into the 2040s on Lindor's deal, which means that people can't make the joke about how in 10 years, when Lindor leaves, the Mets will still be paying Bobby Bonilla. They're going to be paying Francisco Lindor somehow for even longer than they pay Bobby Bonilla.
The Bobby Bonilla thing, and maybe we'll get into this at some other time, is so blown out of proportion. He is not the worst case here.
No, and I think people don't realize that that's like a very common thing, the salary deferment. And I mean, I wrote a whole thing about it. That's been it, every year it like trends on Twitter because I wrote like the counter argument to the stupid Bobby Bonilla Day jokes. Yeah, it was a smart financial deal move for the Mets. Like the money is worth more now than it is later, and especially at the time they thought they were getting like 10% return on their investment. They didn't know Madoff was a fraud yet. I don't know. Yeah, but that's a whole separate thing. We can do a whole show about Bobby Bonilla.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner StubHub has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Do you think Conforto is next? Do you think that I don't know if it was you who pointed out, but I read it somewhere that someone pointed out that Lance McCullers, a guy who has some similarities to Syndergaard and has also had Tommy John signed a long extension with the Astros. Like, does that forebode perhaps an extension for Syndergaard? And then I think as we've discussed at length, like I still think that they should be looking at some of the younger guys as well.
Yeah, so I think we'll go one by one. With Conforto, I think it's still going to be difficult because there's not as, you know, Conforto's track record is not what Lindor's is. His, you know, Conforto's best season was last year. It was 60 games. He also had a really great 2017, but that's a couple years ago. And again, was not like the full 162 game season. He got hurt at the end of that year. And so you don't have, you know, Lindor had the 4 or 5 years of four to, you know, at least 4 or 5 wins above replacement. He had a, one of, I think, 7.5 wins above replacement. Like you,
well,
knew
Conforto, that, I mean, Conforto's not going to get 10 years and $341 million.
Right, yeah. But you also don't have like the year-to-year consistency with him. Like if you think he's the player he was in 2020, then this is a guy who, yeah, is close to a $200 million player. If you think he's the kind of guy who's, he's going to hit close to 30 and 100 for you, but by hitting 260, getting on base at a 340 clip, not, you know, the 380, 390, I think he was over 400 last year, not at that clip, then he's you know, he's not going to, He's a nine-figure player, I think, in any case, but he's not a $200 million player. You know, I think there's a little bit more uncertainty with where he is on the spectrum, where he resides for the best outfielders in the game, and that, you know, both sides could use a little bit of in-game knowledge this year. And Conforto is not knocking down, you know, I think Lindor preferred to sign an extension as long as it was within the realm of what he wanted. I don't think Conforto is knocking down that door quite the same way. I don't think the Mets are knocking down Conforto's door the same way they were with Lindor. There wasn't the same urgency from both sides, I think, to get something done the way they did in that case. So I'm more pessimistic about that getting done in the near future with those two. And then I did write the thing about Syndergaard and McCullers. And what struck me was like, McCullers had Tommy John and missed 2019 and came back and made 11 starts last year in 2020, the full season, but it's still 11 starts, and got an $85 million contract over 5 years. And Syndergaard is going to miss all of 2020. He'll come back and he'll make, you know, you would think at least 11 starts or around that number this year. And if he pitches reasonably well, you know, McCullers pitched a little bit worse than his career track record, which is worse than Syndergaard's career track record, and still got $85 million. So if Syndergaard pitches, you know, okay down the stretch, that suggests, you know, he hits the open market, he's probably getting a $100 million deal himself. That's what that said to me, because he's also, you know, McCullers was like the one guy who was going to be younger than him in free agency, and now he's not there.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost look at Zach Wheeler as like a, because, you know, Wheeler missed a lot of time with Tommy John as well. Like, you can almost look at him at him as a comp for Syndergaard there.
Yeah, and like, you know, I had said a lot last year that, you know, Syndergaard would be an interesting guy to try to sign to like a short extension, like a 2 year thing. You see teams sign free agents who have just undergone Tommy John to like a 2 year deal where they know they're only getting the second part of it. And Syndergaard seemed like, you know, once he gets hurt in March of last year, maybe you talk about that with him. But I think you've gotten to the point now where he's healthy enough, he's progressed enough in his rehab, where he's probably not interested in a deal like that. You know, he sees what McCullers got. He's willing to bet on himself. He has said that in the past, that he's probably willing to just kind of roll the dice, see what happens.
What about Noah Syndergaard suggests he's willing to bet on himself? yeah, I mean, but I don't know. What if they threw 585 at him right now? Do you think he takes it?
No, I think because his numbers are almost twice what McCullers were in terms of wins above replacement. I don't think that means he's a 5-for-170 player by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
But it's probably you're talking closer to the deal Wheeler signed, which was 5-for-118 than what McCullers did. And you would understand if you're the Mets, that's not something you're going to throw out before he makes a start for you.
Any chance they sign Stroman?
I don't, you know, I haven't heard anything in that
seems
space
like,
yet.
It seems least likely, and only because I have heard like no rumblings.
Yeah, there have been no rumblings about it. And you know, he's another one that I feel like is tougher to exactly place where he fits, mm-hmm. because, you know, like Wheeler got paid off of his stuff as much as he got paid off of his results. You know, I think his career ERA plus was like 101 when he signed. But you could see that he was improving and there was more to unlock there, that the Mets hadn't quite consistently unlocked the latter part of his time there. And Stroman is a guy who gets pretty good results, but they're different than the rest of the league's trends. He's not striking guys out a ton, although he did the second half of 2019 with the Mets. He's a ground ball contact guy. So I think that's another person you want to see what he does this year, to see exactly how he fits the current trends in Major League Baseball. And you know, I feel like there's a wider range of where he falls in free agency. He's another guy who will be younger than 30 when he hits free agency. I mean, maybe he might be 30 now that he's got the qualifying offer for a year, but still on the younger side for a pitcher in free agency. And I think my guess is that he after a year where he didn't test free agency last year, that he's willing to do that this year without the qualifying offer attached to him.
I guess that having a bunch of good young players who you might want, who you're interested in signing to extensions, is like kind of a good problem, especially when you now have the richest owner in baseball. And I kind of hope that Lindor somehow in that ravioli chicken parm dinner, like, earned his way into Steve Cohen's ear and will now just be like, yeah, extend Conforto, extend McNeil, extend, you know, because I got to imagine coming from Cleveland, like, and what he must have, I mean, because he played for such good teams with the Indians, like, just, and then to have it, like, every year, it was like every year they would pick it apart a little more, and, like, the team stayed good. And how frustrating it must have been to just be like, hey, you know, if we could just, like, put in this extra money and go this one extra mile. Like, this is a World Series caliber team. They made the World Series. They were consistently in the playoffs. They consistently had some of the best starting pitching. I wonder the extent to which, you know, that sort of guided him to sign this extension, that gave him the mentality of wanting an extension so badly. Like, the feeling of, like, coming to this new team and just, like, someone turning on the lights and, like, it's going to be different here. This is the Steve Cohen Mets, and, like, welcome aboard, bro.
Yeah, I mean, you see, I think once Cohen and Co. were willing to go to the $300 million that Lindor, you know, that was kind of the baseline, right? Was that deal was going to start with a three. The willingness to match Lindor's price or to meet halfway at least suggests, you know, that makes Lindor want to sign even more, because it's like, oh, you know, he's willing to go where he needs to go to keep this team, to get this team where I want it to be as a consistent contender. You know, Cleveland, one of the reasons they have been able to extend this window was some of the extensions they signed earlier. You know, Jose Ramirez, they signed to a very inexpensive team-friendly mm-hmm. extension. Corey Kluber, you look at the opposite approaches the Mets and Indians took with DeGrom and Kluber, their respective Stetson Cy Young winners. You know, the Indians extended Kluber pretty early, I think before he had won the Cy Young, and pretty inexpensively. And the Mets waited for a while with DeGrom, and it cost them a lot more money, although still pretty significantly below market. And the, you know, Cleveland going back to like the 90s, that was how they signed all those guys to extensions. Mm-hmm. They were the first team to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you hope that,
and it's basically, and there's been continuity in the front office since then, right? Like, I feel like there's never been like a massive sweep am I wrong on that? I feel like they've had, it's just been promotions, never like a fully new guy.
I think so. I mean, you've got like so many people in the sport have branched out from that mid to late 90s Cleveland front office. You've got guys in Boston who then moved to Chicago or in Arizona and all those places. The guys in Toronto, the fingerprints of that Cleveland front office are everywhere. So, you know, we've talked about it a bunch. Like, Dominic Smith is a guy that the Mets should probably be talking about a longer term extension with. Brandon Nimmo is a guy that makes sense. And Alonzo McNeil, there are ways to do the kind of, you know, those guys are probably all beyond what David Fletcher of the Angels signed on Thursday. But that's the type of deal that I think the Mets haven't explored much in the last decade and should be what they prioritize moving forward.
I want to keep this show tight tonight because there was no baseball game but we do want to take, I do want to take a question from Twitter tonight. And we got a bunch of good ones, and I want to put a pin in for later, which is asking you about Staten Island Pizza, but that feels like maybe too loaded a conversation to jump into here. So now I'm looking for the one that I should have probably opened in a tab on my computer. Here it is. It's from Andrew Emmer at Andrew Emmer on Twitter. He says, who is the coolest Met of the last 20 years? Not necessarily best, and they don't have to even play them for them for all that long. Just coolest to wear a Mets uniform in the last 20 years. Last 20 years, you've got Jose Reyes, David Wright. You've got like some stars. You got Mike Piazza played in the last 20 years. Tim, do you have an answer? Who is the coolest Met of the last 20 years?
The first one that came to mind to me, and you have told me you have the right answer.
I have the correct answer. So, and I think you might have it too.
The first one that came to my mind was Cliff Floyd. Because Cliff Floyd, every conversation I've only had.
I'm going to feel so bad saying it's wrong because Cliff Floyd came and played baseball with me and my friends one time. And he is such a cool guy. Like, he is such a cool guy. But go on.
You know, I've had maybe two or three conversations with Cliff Floyd. They've all been great. They've all been very funny. He knows how to make fun of the players he played with. I remember the night that David Wright played his last game, Floyd was there. And you know, he said some really nice things about Wright, you know, great guy, great character and all this, and then just dropped like, can't dress at all. Although that changed once he got money. Now he knows how to, which was perfect. And you know, Floyd, every Mets fan, his chief memory of Cliff Floyd, his or her chief memory of Cliff Floyd is the home run he hit against the Angels, after he had just hit one foul in June of 2005. I think. And that was, to me as a fan, one of the coolest home runs you could hit, is like to just miss it and then expressly try again and nail it on, I think it was the next pitch, pitch or two after, against Brendan Donnelly, to win the game. Right. And I remember Floyd like letting out a yell while he rounded second base, and that seemed like the coolest thing in the world.
He was an incredibly charismatic player and definitely a cool guy. But coolest to me is a no doubt Tsuyoshi Shinjo, the Elvis Presley of Japan. like it's just this guy was the cool. Like if you and I actually was just on a podcast earlier this week, and it was a funny. The premise was like I drafted a Mets team of players who had never made an All-Star team or won any postseason awards, and so you had to draft like the best Mets who never got any sort of recognition in that way. And I took Shinjo with my last pick just from my bench because I just loved him so much. And I said this then, if you go to YouTube and search for Tsuyoshi Shinjo, prepare to spend like the rest of your afternoon watching Tsuyoshi Shinjo commercials in Japan because they are incredible. He is extraordinarily charismatic. He's very handsome. He can dress. He can move like he is just cool. He is treated as a god in Japan, as he should be. And even though, you know, not the best Met, certainly not the best. No one would accuse him of being the best Met of the last 20 years. But to me, undoubtedly the coolest.
He homered in the home opener in 2001. Was that his claim to on-field fame with the Mets? I feel like...
Was that... I know Kazumatsui always homered on opening day, and he was like another big name Japanese import. I don't remember if Shinjo homered in the home opener. I would have been there because I definitely would have gone to the 2001 home opener. Here we go to our baseball reference game logs. 2001. Yes, he did homer in the home opener. You're correct.
Nailed it. And I believe like by the end of that season, he was like. He was like batting cleanup when they were making that run in September, you know, before the Benitez blown saves, where it was just like, oh yeah, like naturally, you've got your lineup, you've got your Alfonso Piazza Shinjo,
yeah, right.
Just like the plan.
Shinjo hit fourth for like most of the games in September and October of that year. That's wild. But he had a nice season that year. He had like I don't know, 725 OPS in 2001 baseball is not really a nice season. Is it seven? That's a nice OPS for like 2011 baseball.
When the year of the pitcher came back.
Yeah. Tim, let's wrap it up there. Thank you everyone for listening. Hopefully, by the next time we speak, hopefully there will actually be baseball games to talk about. Let's cross our fingers for that. Tim, don't jinx this one, please, or unjinx or whatever you did. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe, rate, review on iTunes, Spotify, everywhere you could do those things. You can ask us questions either on Twitter. I'm at OGTedBerg, Tim's at Tim Britton, or you can email me and I will relay the questions to the podcast at askTedBerg@gmail.com. Tim, best of luck watching a real baseball game that the Mets play at some point.
I'm looking forward to it. Adios.
Peace out.